Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a really fascinating web of stories, all centered around how artificial intelligence is changing things up in the insurance landscape.
Yeah, and what makes this, exploration kind of unique is our source material. We're drawing insights from this document, classtext.pdf. It's not your typical report, is it?
No, not at all. It's more like a collection of experiences, really, shared by different insurance pros who are all learning together on a course.
It reminds me a bit of Chaucer, actually. The Canterbury Tales, fellow travelers sharing stories. And through those stories, you learn something bigger.
Exactly. We get views from, a veteran claims adjuster, a life insurance specialist, someone in customer experience, an underwriting director.
An agency owner, a compliance officer, even someone from a small rural agency. It paints a really rich picture, doesn't it? Built from these individual stories.
So our mission for this deep dive is basically to pull out the practical ways AI is being used day to day.
Right. And also tackle the big ethical questions it raises and figure out how the human role in insurance is shifting as AI gets more, integrated.
We want to give you, the listener, a really clear understanding of this major shift. Quickly, but thoroughly. Get you properly informed.
Sounds good. Where should we start?
Let's jump right into our first story. It's about Sarah Jenkins. She's a claims adjuster, been at Steadfast Insurance for like 20 years.
Okay.
Known for being super meticulous, very traditional. They apparently called her Eagle Eye Jenkins.
Hey, Eagle Eye. I like it. Suggests real attention to detail.
Totally. She was trained by this guy, Harold Winters, a Korean War vet. His philosophy was the eye remembers what the camera misses. So
yeah.
Very much about human observation.
Okay, so she's the old guard, resists technology, maybe.
Initially, yes. But then two things happened that really forced a change.
What were they?
First, the pandemic. Suddenly, everyone's working remotely. Big shift.
Right. That threw a wrench in the works for a lot of traditional processes.
And then, bam, a massive hailstorm hits. Just completely overwhelmed their claims department. Not enough people, too many claims.
Ah, the perfect storm. So necessity becomes the mother of invention.
Pretty much. That's where her daughter, Lily, comes in. Lily works at an insert tech startup.
Okay.
And they have this AI system,
yeah.
Claims Assist, specifically for analyzing hail damage photos.
I can see where this is going. Conflict ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sarah, with her I Remembers philosophy, and Lily, the tech advocate. Big clash. Apparently, they didn't speak for like 3 months.
Wow. That's serious. So how did they resolve it? Or did they?
Well, the workload was just too much. Sarah kind of reluctantly agreed to test Claims Assist.
Just to see it. Was it any good?
Shockingly good from her perspective. The AI's damage estimates, within 2% of her own meticulous manual assessments.
2%? That's impressive accuracy.
But here's the kicker. The AI did it in, a few minutes? Her process took nearly an hour per claim. The time difference was huge, 47 minutes, the story said.
47 minutes saved per claim. That adds up incredibly fast when you're swamped.
Exactly. But it gets even more interesting. Sarah found something else. Unexpected.
Ooh.
When the AI's assessment differed from hers, it wasn't always wrong. It actually made her stop and think. And she realized it was highlighting some of her own biases. Ingrained assumptions she didn't even know she had.
Wow. So the AI acted like a mirror, in a way. Reflecting back potential blind spots.
Yeah, sort of. So she started integrating it. Let the AI do the initial heavy lifting, the photo analysis, the data entry.
And that freed her up?
Massively.
Yeah.
She tripled her processing speed. Tripled. And it meant she could focus her energy on the really complex cases, the tricky ones, and importantly, actually talk to the customers.
The human connection part, which leads us to...
the Anderson claim.
Yeah.
This is a tough one. An elderly guy, his roof already had some damage, but now he's facing real financial hardship because his wife was very ill.
Okay, complicated. What did the AI say?
The AI did its job. It accurately flagged discrepancies. Potential fraud indicators, technically speaking. Pre-existing damage, that kind of thing.
But it couldn't see the human story behind it. The illness, the hardship.
Exactly. It just saw data points. Sarah was at a crossroads. Policy says one thing, empathy says another. AI's limitations right there in plain sight. It can't do compassion.
That's a powerful example of where the human adjuster is irreplaceable. So what happened?
Well, this specific case became a catalyst within the company. Sarah pushed for change based on this experience.
Good for her.
Yeah. She was key in developing something they called the Anderson Protocol. A new company policy.
What'd it do?
It basically gave adjusters guidelines, resources, and crucially, flexibility for these situations where, you know, technical fraud flags meet genuine human crisis.
That sounds like a really sensible approach, acknowledging the gray areas.
Definitely. And Sarah became this big advocate for the human AI partnership model. She even created training guides.
So she went from skeptic to champion.
Totally. And kind of unexpectedly, they put her in charge of the company's new human AI partnership program. HAIPP, they called it.
HAIPP. Okay. And did it work?
Big time. Processing metrics improved. Customer satisfaction scores went up. They even got a new company slogan out of it.
Which was?
Technology for efficiency. People for what matters most.
I like that. Captures the balance.
Yeah. So Sarah, the former Eagle Eye, became known as the AI Whisperer. She even started working with her daughter Lily on refining things.
What a turnaround. A great story.
The takeaway really is that the best results come from combining that tech efficiency with human understanding and compassion. That partnership is key.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, who's next?
Next up is Daniel Whitman. He's a life insurance specialist, background in mathematics, very numbers-driven guy.
The numbers man, perhaps, focused on actuarial tables, calculations.
Exactly. You know, actuarial tables, the statistical charts insurers use to figure out risk and set premiums. His whole motivation for getting into insurance actually stemmed from his own family. His dad didn't have life insurance, and it caused real hardship when he passed away.
Okay, so a personal connection to the value of insurance, but very analytical in his approach.
Right. But then COVID hits. Disrupts everything again.
How did it affect him? More virtual meetings, I assume.
Yeah, and for him, that was a real challenge. He found it harder to connect, to build trust online. His closing rate actually started to decline noticeably.
Interesting. The lack of face-to-face interaction impacted his results, even for a numbers guy.
Seems so. Then his company rolls out a new AI tool called LifeMatch.
LifeMatch? What did it do?
Designed to analyze client data and spit out personalized policy recommendations.
Okay. And let me guess, Daniel, the numbers man, was skeptical.
Highly skeptical. He just couldn't see how an algorithm, you know, lines of code, could possibly grasp the human nuances, the emotions, the specific life situations involved in choosing life insurance.
Fair point. It's a very personal decision. So did he try it?
Reluctantly, yeah. He tested it on himself first, plugged in his own data.
And the result?
He was genuinely surprised. The recommendations were not just accurate, but really comprehensive. It even highlighted a few things, potential future needs, that he hadn't fully considered for himself.
Huh. So it saw patterns or connections he'd missed.
Seems like it. So he pushed it further. Started testing with hypothetical clients. Complex scenarios, maybe conflicting data points.
Trying to break it, basically.
Sort of, yeah. And he found it was actually pretty good at flagging inconsistencies or areas that needed, you know, a human deep dive. It didn't just give an answer. It highlighted questions sometimes.
That's useful. Not just a black box, but a tool that flags things for review.
Exactly. His first real case using it was with a single mother, Melissa Rodriguez.
Okay. How did LifeMatch help there?
Well, the AI picked up on something kind of specific, her equity compensation vesting schedule.
Ah, like when her company stock options become fully hers.
Right. An important financial detail, but maybe one that wouldn't come up in an initial standard conversation. LifeMatch flagged it.
And that opened a door.
Totally. It led to a much deeper conversation about her long-term financial security, her values. Turned out, her parents had been hit hard in the 2008 crisis. So that security piece was huge for her. The AI recommendation provided a starting point for that richer discussion.
So it helped frame the conversation, not just dictate the product.
Precisely. But it wasn't foolproof. There was another case, James Chen.
What happened there? The algorithm's flaw, maybe?
You could call it that.
Yeah.
The AI gave technically sound, financially logical recommendations. But it completely missed James's primary concern.
Which was?
He had a valuable collection of rare books. His main goal was ensuring the collection was protected and passed on properly. Something the standard data points wouldn't capture.
Ah, the non-quantifiable priorities. The things that matter personally, not just financially.
Exactly. It was a stark reminder.
Yeah.
You still need the human agent to listen, to ask the right questions, to uncover those kinds of goals.
So what did they do? Did they improve the system based on this?
They did. They built a feedback loop. Agents could now feed these kinds of human insights, these story details, back into the LifeMatch system so it could learn and adapt over time.
That's smart. Combining the human intel with the AI's processing power.
Yeah. And then came another really eye-opening moment, Maria Diaz's case.
What was significant about that one? A bias blind spot.
Bingo. The AI, which apparently had an ethics module built in, flagged a potential pattern in Daniel's recommendations.
In his recommendations, not the AI's.
Right. It suggested he might be unconsciously recommending slightly more conservative coverage options to female clients like Maria compared to male clients with similar financial profiles.
Wow. The AI detected potential human bias.
Exactly. That was a huge moment for Daniel, realizing that even he, the numbers guy, could have unconscious biases affecting his advice.
That must have been quite confronting.
I imagine so. But it turned him into a real advocate for what he started calling augmented insurance practice.
Augmented practice, right.
Meaning using AI not just for calculations, but also as a tool to enhance human capabilities, including identifying potential biases. He got involved in developing training focused on those irreplaceable human skills. Empathy, ethical judgment, understanding context.
Cultural sensitivity too, I bet.
Yes, that was mentioned. And eventually he ended up chairing an industry committee.
Oh, well. On what?
Developing ethical guidelines for using AI in life insurance, they outlined 5 core principles.
Which were, let me guess, transparency.
Yep. Transparency, how it works, accountability, who's responsible, fairness, avoiding bias, privacy, protecting data.
And the 5th, human centricity.
You got it. Keeping the focus on serving human needs.
That's a solid framework.
Uh-huh.
So Daniel's journey was quite profound.
Absolutely. He went from being purely numbers focused to understanding his purpose differently, seeing how AI could actually enhance human service, not just automate it.
The key takeaway there seems to be that real expertise isn't just doing the math, but understanding what the math means for people's actual lives.
Well put. Okay, story number 3.
Let's do it.
This one features Gabriela Morales. She's a customer experience manager, but she started right at the front lines in a call center.
Ah, so she knows the pressures firsthand. High call volumes, focus on average handle time.
Exactly. She talked about that pressure, getting through calls quickly, sometimes, you know, not fully resolving the underlying issue because you had to move on.
A common problem in traditional call centers, unfortunately. So what changed? AI, presumably.
Yep. Her company, Pinnacle Insurance, brought in Response AI, an AI system to help manage customer interactions, emails, chats, maybe even calls.
And how did the call center team react? Fear and resistance?
Pretty much the typical reaction, yeah. Worries about jobs, about AI not understanding customers, standard concerns.
Understandable. So what was Gabriela's role?
She actually volunteered to lead the feedback team for Response AI. Her team's job was to review the AI's interactions, see what was working, what wasn't.
Like quality control for the AI.
Kind of.
Oh,
and they developed something really important, an emotional escalation framework.
Emotional escalation? What's that?
Basically, a system for the AI to recognize signs of significant customer distress, frustration, anger, confusion, and automatically flag those interactions for immediate human intervention.
Smart. Prioritizing human help for those who need it most emotionally.
Right. They rolled out Response AI using a hybrid model, AI handling some things, humans others. But it wasn't smooth sailing initially.
What kinds of problems?
Customers were sometimes confused about whether they were talking to a bot or a person, got frustrated if the AI couldn't handle their specific query. The usual teething problems.
And so did they figure it out?
A key insight was that different customers had really different preferences. Some were happy dealing with AI for simple things. Others wanted a human straight away.
Ah, so personalization became key, not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly. But then something really interesting happened. Something they didn't expect.
What was that?
Response AI started handling lots of routine queries from customers who almost never contacted the company before. People who wouldn't bother calling a human for a simple question.
The unheard voices, perhaps? People whose minor issues just weren't getting addressed previously.
That's exactly what they called them. It revealed all these unmet needs, especially in maybe underserved customer segments. And it led them to think more proactively. Like, maybe we should reach out to these customers before they have a problem.
So the AI data actually spurred a shift towards proactive outreach.
Yeah. And another thing, Response AI started acting like a canary in the coal mine.
How so?
By flagging recurring questions or points of confusion from lots of different customers, it highlighted systemic issues, problems with confusing policy wording, or clunky processes that lots of people were struggling with.
Ah, so the AI wasn't just handling queries, it was providing diagnostic data about the business itself.
Exactly right. And the real test of the AI-human partnership came during a major hurricane.
A crisis situation. How did it play out?
It was critical. Response AI could scale up instantly to handle the massive influx of basic inquiries. Is my policy covered? How do I start a claim? that kind of thing.
Leaving the human agents free too.
To deal with the complex claims, the people who'd lost homes, and crucially, provide empathy and support to traumatized customers. The AI handled the volume. The humans handled the trauma.
That's a powerful demonstration of the hybrid model working under pressure.
Definitely. And this whole experience led them to completely rethink customer service. They moved away from just a reactive call center.
Towards something more strategic.
Yeah, they created a proactive customer experience center, using predictive analytics to anticipate needs, having specialized teams, a much bigger vision.
And like Daniel's story, I assume ethics played a part.
Absolutely. Gabriela's team was central in developing an ethical framework for response AI. Transparency, making it clear when you're talking to AI. Privacy, giving customers control over how they interact.
Good. Essential guardrails.
So Gabriela's story wraps up with this idea she called the human dividend.
The human dividend. What does that mean?
Unexpected positive side effects. Things like employee turnover in the call center actually decreasing because the work became more meaningful, less repetitive, and customer advocacy people recommending the company went up.
Interesting. So improving the employee experience led to better customer outcomes too.
Seems like it. The big takeaway from her tale is that technology in customer service isn't really about replacing humans.
It's about making sure the human connection happens when it truly counts, at those moments of greatest need or impact.
You nailed it. That's the core message. Making human interaction more meaningful by automating the routine.
Right. Another great example. Okay, story number four.
Dr. Amara Wilson. She's an underwriting director at Horizon Insurance. Background in actuarial science, like Daniel. But her real passion was tackling historical inequities in underwriting.
Okay, so focused on fairness from the start. Underwriting, that's the process of assessing risk and deciding whether to offer insurance and at what price, right?
Exactly. And she had a mentor, Robert, a very experienced traditional underwriter. So a mix of perspectives there, too.
So Horizon brings in AI for underwriting, let me guess. Risk AI.
You're good at this, yes. Risk AI, designed to enhance underwriting decisions. But Amara, with her focus on equity,
immediately saw the potential danger that biases baked into historical data could get amplified by the AI.
Precisely. Historical data often reflects past societal biases, like redlining in housing. If you train an AI on that data without correcting for it, the AI just learns the same biases.
A huge ethical minefield. So what was her role?
She was tapped to lead the ethical implementation of RIC AI. Her job was to make sure it was fair.
A critical task. How did they approach it?
They started with core principles. Explainability, the AI's decisions had to be understandable. Fairness outcomes couldn't be discriminatory. Accountability, clear responsibility.
And how did they translate those principles into practice? Data cleaning, algorithmic adjustments.
Both. A painstaking process, apparently. Cleaning the historical data to remove or flag bias elements, and then actually building fairness constraints into Risk AI's architecture, trying to teach it not to replicate those past inequities.
That sounds incredibly complex. Did initial tests work?
The initial tests were revealing. They showed disparities that unfortunately mirrored those historical inequities, even with the safeguards.
So a conflict between technical accuracy predicting risk based on historical patterns and ethical fairness.
Exactly. That was the core tension, what Amara called the fairness dilemma.
How do you solve that? How do you tell the AI which patterns are legitimate risk factors and which are just proxies for old discrimination?
That was the million-dollar question. Take zip codes, for example. A zip code might correlate with risk historically, but often because of factors linked to discriminatory practices like redlining, not inherent risk of the people living there.
Right. So using zip code directly could perpetuate that past unfairness.
Exactly. Their solution involved developing what they termed community-calibrated models.
Community-calibrated, meaning?
Basically, instead of one single model for everyone, they developed models tailored to the specific context and history of different communities, trying to account for those varying background factors and historical disadvantages. It wasn't just about statistical parity, but about understanding the context.
That sounds much more nuanced. Do they also work on making the AI decisions understandable to applicants, the explainability piece?
Yes, that was key. They developed a novel explanation system, trying to translate the complex AI reasoning into plain language so applicants could understand why a decision was made and even challenge it if necessary. More transparency, more agency for the customer.
That's crucial for trust. How did the implementation go overall? Any pushback?
Oh, there were challenges. Agents needed retraining. They had to learn to be advocates for their clients within this new AI-driven system. And the business faced a tough dilemma, too.
What was that?
What do you do when the fairer AI model shows you've been overcharging some groups and undercharging others based on the old biased methods?
Yeah, correcting that isn't simple. How did they handle it?
They decided on immediate fairer pricing for all new customers. For existing customers, they phased in the changes gradually at renewal time to avoid sudden shocks.
A pragmatic approach. You mentioned community calibration. Did they involve communities directly?
They did. They set up a community advisory board. Representatives from diverse communities gave input, shared perspectives.
And that helped shape their understanding of fairness, moving beyond just stats.
Hugely. It shifted the conversation to include historical context, structural issues, a much richer definition of what fair actually means in insurance.
That community involvement sounds vital. Did Risk AI uncover anything else? Any unexpected insights?
It did. Something they called the systemic insight. Risk AI started identifying broader inequities across the whole insurance ecosystem, not just in their own underwriting.
Like what?
For instance, disparities in insurance availability or pricing for rental properties, which seemed linked to certain landlord practices, not just the tenants.
Wow. So the AI was seeing patterns beyond the individual applicant.
Yeah. And that led Horizon to launch proactive initiatives, things like programs encouraging better landlord practices, community risk reduction projects, trying to address the root causes the AI was flagging.
That's taking responsibility to a whole new level, using AI insights to try and fix systemic problems.
Absolutely. And when the regulators came to examine Risk AI,
they were probably expecting problems.
Maybe initially. But the conversation apparently shifted. It became about how AI, implemented thoughtfully like this, could actually improve regulatory effectiveness. The regulators even acknowledged Horizon's approach as a potential best practice.
That's a significant outcome. Validation from the regulators.
Definitely.
Yeah.
They started expanding Risk AI to other lines of insurance, different regions, facing new challenges like homeowners insurance and the legacy of housing segregation.
Which required different solutions, presumably.
Yeah, things like creating a community resilience fund to support mitigation efforts in historically underserved areas, constantly adapting.
So Amara's story is really about embedding ethics right into the technology and the process.
Yes, and transforming underwriting into what she called conscious underwriting. Being aware of history, context, and actively working towards fairness. They also committed to sharing what they learned with the wider industry.
The key takeaway feels like true innovation isn't just fancy tech. It's about whether that tech expands access to security, especially for those who've been left out in the past.
Beautifully put. That really captures it.
Okay, 5 down, 2 to go, or is it 3? Let's see. Sarah, Daniel, Gabriella, Amara.
5. Next is Victoria Reyes. She owns an insurance agency, Cornerstone Insurance. Her big focus has always been building those really strong, long-lasting client relationships.
Okay, so relationship-driven. How does AI fit into her world?
Well, they adopted a tool called Insight AI. Initially, they just saw it as, you know, an operational upgrade, a better CRM system, basically.
CRM, customer relationship management, standard agency tool.
Right. But Insight AI turned out to be much more than that. It had potential for way deeper client understanding.
How so? What did it do differently?
It acted like a digital mirror. It analyzed client communications, emails, notes from calls, that kind of thing. Not just for explicit insurance questions, but for underlying themes, concerns, maybe anxieties.
So reading between the lines, digitally, looking for latent needs.
Exactly. It started uncovering things clients weren't directly asking about, but were clearly on their minds. Maybe worries about retirement, kids going to college, aging parents, life stuff.
That's fascinating. So what did they do with those insights?
It sparked what Victoria called the engagement revolution. They shifted their whole approach.
Away from just reacting to insurance events like policy renewals or claims.
Precisely. They moved towards proactive, personalized engagement pathways based not just on the client's insurance products, but on their likely life stage, their inferred goals, those meaning moments the AI was hinting at.
Meaning moments. I like that phrase. So aligning engagement with life transitions.
Yeah. And this caused a fundamental rethink within the agency. They started seeing their purpose differently.
Not just selling insurance products, but...
But becoming trusted guides. Yeah. Helping clients navigate these significant life transitions. That became the core mission.
That requires a different skill set from the agency team, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely. They had to focus much more on cultural intelligence, emotional perception, communication adaptability, really honing those human interaction skills.
So the AI provided the insight, but the humans had to deliver the nuanced guidance.
Right. The advisor role shifted, less product specialist, more meaning moment guide. Combining the AI's pattern recognition with genuine human empathy and connection.
Makes sense. Did this change how clients interacted with them?
It did. Something really interesting happened. Clients started bringing non-insurance concerns to the agency.
Oh, like financial planning questions.
Oh, yeah.
Legal stuff.
Things like that, yeah. Because they now saw the agency as this central point of guidance for life's challenges. So Cornerstone had to adapt again.
How? They couldn't become experts in everything overnight.
No, but they started developing curated partnerships, connecting clients with trusted financial planners, estate lawyers, elder care consultants, building an ecosystem of support around the client.
Ah, moving beyond traditional insurance boundaries to offer more holistic protection planning.
Exactly. It reinforced that identity shift from insurance sellers to meaning moment guides. It became about value alignment, supporting clients through the whole transition, not just the insurance part.
So when the industry faced disruption, maybe new online competitors or whatever, how did Cornerstone respond?
Their strategy was clear. Double down on the value of that meaning-focused human guidance enhanced by technology. They argue that pure tech couldn't replicate that deep relationship, especially during emotionally charged life events.
Positioning the human touch, augmented by AI insight, as their key differentiator.
Precisely. And Victoria started thinking about legacy. She formalized their approach into the Cornerstone principles.
What were they?
Human connection, integrated intelligence, transition guidance, and cultural attunement. And they even established a small research institute to promote this idea of meaning-aligned protection planning.
Wow, really committing to that vision.
Yeah. So her story ends with this transformation, not just of the agency, but of her own understanding of what protection planning really means.
And the key takeaway here: technology's biggest gift isn't just making things faster,
but making things clearer, revealing those deeper client needs that were always there, but maybe hidden, and, paradoxically, creating more space for deep human connection right when it's needed most.
Clarity leading to connection. I like that. Okay, on to Benjamin Washington.
Yep, Benjamin Washington. He's a compliance officer at National Shield Insurance.
Compliance. Okay, ensuring the company follows all the rules and regulations, a challenging job, especially with the sheer volume of communication these days.
Exactly. That was his initial big headache. How do you effectively monitor mountains of emails, chat logs, call transcripts, etc., to make sure everything's compliant? It's a huge task.
I can only imagine. So enter AI. Compliance Guard, perhaps.
You're on a roll. Compliance Guard it is. An AI system designed specifically to analyze the language in all those communications.
How is it trained? On regulations? Past cases?
Initially, yeah. Fed loads of historical communications data, regulatory documents, legal precedents, trying to teach it what compliant and non-compliant language looks like.
And did it evolve? Did it get better?
It did. Through continuous feedback from Benjamin's team, they refined it. They have all the specialized modules for different insurance lines, life, property, health, because the compliance nuances vary. It got pretty sophisticated at spotting subtle issues.
Okay, so it's good at finding potential problems, but did it do anything else? Anything proactive?
Yes, and this was really interesting. Compliance Guard started identifying language patterns that weren't just about avoiding trouble, but were actually associated with positive outcomes.
Like what? Higher customer satisfaction, fewer complaints.
Exactly. Patterns linked to building trust, clearer explanations, better customer understanding.
So it could identify good communication, not just bad.
Right. And this led them to develop trust enhancement modules.
Okay. What did those do?
They used the AI's insights to provide proactive guidance to the customer service reps and agents, like suggesting alternative phrasing, highlighting potentially confusing terms, prompting them to confirm understanding, helping them communicate more effectively and build trust.
So using compliance tech to actually improve the customer experience and build trust, that's a neat twist.
Isn't it? And Compliance Guard also proved its worth during a crisis, maybe a regulatory change or a product issue. It acted as an early warning system.
How? By picking up on emerging patterns of confusion or concern in communications faster than humans could.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like potential compliance risks much earlier. But Benjamin also stressed something called compliance drift.
Compliance drift, like standards slowly slipping over time.
Yeah. Even with AI monitoring, practices can gradually deviate. So he emphasized that human oversight, training, and reinforcement are still absolutely essential. The AI is a tool, a compliance sense-making tool, he called it, not a replacement for human judgment and diligence.
Makes sense.
Technology supports, but doesn't replace the human responsibility for compliance.
Right, and they evolved their approach further towards something they called a predictive guardian.
Predictive? How?
Compliance guards started analyzing upcoming regulatory changes or the language in new product documentation before launch, trying to anticipate potential compliance issues proactively rather than just reacting after the fact.
Getting ahead of the curve, that's smart. How did regulators view this AI-enhanced approach?
Very positively, it seems. During a regulatory exam, their system was actually highlighted as a potential industry best practice, using AI not just for oversight, but for proactive risk management and trust building.
That's strong validation again. So Benjamin's perspective is?
He strongly believed in sharing these innovations, helping raise the bar for the whole industry. His final point was that real compliance isn't just about ticking boxes on regulation.
That's about?
It's about fulfilling the fundamental promise of protection that insurance is built on. That's what gives it purpose and value. The regulations are just a framework for upholding that trust.
That's a great way to frame it. Compliance as serving the core purpose, not just avoiding penalties.
Exactly. Okay, ready for our final story?
Let's hear it. Eleanor Carter.
Yes, Eleanor Carter. She represents Heartland Insurance, which is different from the others. It's a smaller agency, deeply rooted in its rural community.
Okay, so different context, different challenges. Modernization pressures. Competition from bigger players. Agent retirement.
All of the above. Plus, the pandemic impact, just like everywhere else. They were trying to find a balance, what Eleanor called selective modernization.
Meaning adopting some new tech, but carefully, without losing that essential personal community touch, face-to-face relationships being key in rural areas.
Exactly. A big specific challenge was agent retirement. They had experienced agents, like one named David, who had decades of deep local knowledge about families, farms, local conditions, knowledge that wasn't written down anywhere.
Ah, the classic knowledge transfer problem. How do you capture that wisdom before it walks out the door?
Their answer was another AI tool, Agent Insight.
Agent Insight, what was its focus?
Specifically designed for knowledge preservation. It analyzed recorded conversations with client permission, of course, interviews with retiring agents like David, and crucially, it linked those conversational insights to other data sources.
Like what? Agricultural data, weather patterns, property records.
Things like that, yeah. Local geography, crop types, historical claims in the area, building a rich, interconnected knowledge base grounded in that specific rural context.
That's clever. Turning tacit knowledge into structured, searchable data. But was it just about documentation?
Initially, maybe.
Yeah.
But they quickly realized it had another potential. Connection extension.
Connection extension.
Yeah. Using the AI not just to store past knowledge, but to enhance current relationships, especially when face-to-face wasn't possible. Analyzing ongoing client communications to spot changing needs, emerging risks, opportunities to offer relevant advice, all informed by that deep community context held in Agents Insight.
So using the AI to maintain that sense of local understanding and proactive support, even remotely.
Right. It became part of a hybrid approach.
Yeah.
Technology wasn't replacing visits. It was making those in-person interactions potentially even more valuable because the agent was better prepared, more informed by the system's insights.
That makes sense. What other rural-specific challenges did they face? Limited expertise, maybe.
Definitely. Being a smaller agency, they couldn't have in-house specialists for every complex risk niche agricultural insurance, maybe complex estate planning for farms.
So how did Agent Insight help there?
They expanded it. They started incorporating knowledge and best practices from external experts, trusted partners. So Agent Insight became like a virtual specialist team that their local agents could tap into for guidance on complex cases.
Democratizing expertise in a way. Bringing specialist knowledge to the local level through AI.
Sort of, yeah. But then there's the big elephant in the room for rural tech adoption.
The digital divide. Uneven internet access. Varying levels of tech comfort among clients.
Exactly. A major hurdle. Heartland couldn't just assume everyone had broadband or was comfortable with online portals.
So what was their solution? Connectivity bridge solutions.
That's what they called it. It involved a mix of things. Flexible communication options, phone, mail, in-person, plus digital were appropriate. And also partnerships with local institutions, libraries, community centers to help provide internet access points or basic digital literacy support for clients who needed it.
Meeting people where they are, technologically speaking. Not forcing everyone into one digital channel.
Right. And another complexity they tackled was intergenerational transitions on family farms.
Ah, passing the farm down. Different generations often have very different communication styles and attitudes towards technology, right?
Totally. So they developed generational bridging strategies using Agent Insight's understanding of client history and preferences to tailor communication, maybe more digital for the younger generation, more traditional for the olders, but ensuring the core message and advice was consistent and relevant to the whole family.
Using tech to bridge communication gaps within families, that's quite sophisticated.
It really shows a deep understanding of their community. So Eleanor's story really wraps up with this key idea.
You may guess. Technology serves rural communities best when it enhances, not replaces, their unique character.
You got it. When it preserves and strengthens the connections, the local knowledge, the relationships that have always been the bedrock of those communities, using tech to amplify community resilience.
A very different flavor from the big corporate stories, but equally powerful in its own way.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's all seven tales. Quite a journey.
It really is. And when you look at them all together, this overarching theme just jumps out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It's consistently shown that AI's true power in insurance, it seems, isn't really about wholesale replacement or just pure automation.
No, it's much more about augmenting human capabilities,
yeah,
enhancing our understanding, helping us connect more deeply, making the human element more effective, not less.
Absolutely. We've seen some clear insights repeated across these different stories, haven't we?
Definitely. First off, the efficiency gains are real. AI handles the routine, the data-heavy tasks, and that frees up people for the stuff AI can't do well. Empathy, complex judgment, nuanced communication.
Right. And second, the ethics piece. It's not an add-on. It has to be central. Continuous vigilance, diverse perspectives, thinking about fairness from the very beginning. That came through again and again.
Mm-hmm. Third, the importance of understanding those underlying client needs and values beyond just the insurance product. Especially during those big life transitions, Victoria Ray has talked about the meaning moments.
Yeah, the AI can surface data, but the human interprets the meaning. Fourth, we saw how AI can actually shine a light on those bigger systemic issues, inequities, process flaws, creating chances for proactive solutions, like with Amara and Gabriella.
And finally, that bridging function. Technology connecting knowledge across time, like with retiring agents, bridging gaps in expertise for smaller players like Heartland, and even helping bridge the digital divide itself when done thoughtfully.
So it really points to this evolution of the insurance professional's role, doesn't it? Less transaction-focused, more towards being guides, orchestrators, ethical stewards.
The human interface in an increasingly technology-enabled system, it's a more complex, arguably more valuable role.
Exactly. So for you listening, wanting that quick but comprehensive understanding,
yeah,
I hope weaving through these specific stories, these narratives, has given you those aha moments.
Yeah, hopefully it distilled the key shifts without just drowning you in abstract concepts or information overload, learning through examples.
So maybe the final thought to leave you with is this. As you reflect on these examples, the claims adjuster, the underwriter, the agent, the CX manager, how might these patterns of AI integration apply in your specific corner of the insurance world?
Right. Where do you see the potential or maybe the pitfalls? How can you in your role contribute to building a future where technology and human wisdom genuinely work hand in hand?
Something to think about. How can we ensure AI serves that fundamental purpose of insurance, providing security, support, and peace of mind in a really complex world?